Hey there, welcome to Embrace Your Strengths podcast. You're going to hear inspiring stories of men and women who are embracing their top five Clifton strengths in all kinds of ways. You'll be encouraged to understand more about what's so great about you, learn how knowing, developing, living more moments using your strengths can bring you joy and purpose in your life. I'm your host, Barbara Colo. Hi there. Welcome to Embrace Your Strengths. I am excited for you today to hear from my guest today in North Carolina, Hannah Hamza. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi. Thank you so much, Barbara, for having me on.
Well, I am very excited to a mutual friend of ours, Janelle Suzanne here in Austin, mentioned to me that you would be a really fun person to talk to for this podcast about embracing your strengths. And so I am eager for us to chat and just for our listeners to hear a little bit about you and your strengths and so many different things you've been doing over the years that are ways that you're using who you are in significant ways. But I would love you to introduce yourself, who you are, where you live, and what you do.
Awesome. So yes, thank you so much. I am Hannah Hamza. I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. And man, when I get asked to introduce myself, it's hard sometimes because I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I wear a lot of hats. First and foremost, I'm a wife and a mother. I have two small kids, 5 and almost 9. But in terms of my professional career, I have been and am a filmmaker, a creative director, as well as a missionary. So I've had a pretty interesting journey, and I'm excited to dive more and kind of share how that journey has definitely been impacted by some of the strengths and how God has uniquely wired me.
That's so great. Well, I have loved kind of digging around, looking at your Instagram, your website, and just some significant things of work that you've done, different films and commercials and all kinds of things. But why don't we start with you telling what your top five Clifton strengths are? I know that you're kind of new to this assessment, so I think it's going to be neat to talk about kind of any insights you've gotten because you've been living out of your strengths in so many ways, but just maybe a little added insight about that. So what are your top five strengths?
My top five are belief, connectedness, futuristic, developer, and self-assurance.
Yeah. So like when you took the assessment, which I know is just recent, kind of what hit you about that? Or did these results surprise you? Or how have you seen these lived out in your life?
For the most part, I felt like they were spot on. I think the one that surprised me was self-assurance, because I think I thought of that as sort of being not only like self-confident, but also more kind of like a loner, that you kind of make decisions on your own and you go and do it. But I think really it's more about having, I think it, that one connects more back with belief, which is one of the on my top. And I think because I have a strong belief or idea in something, that it makes me feel, you know, confident to move forward, take risks in a certain direction. But I was, as unpacking it, it's not necessarily that I'm a lone ranger, because I was like, I don't actually like working alone. I'm a very collaborative person, and being a filmmaker and a creative, really, you have to be very collaborative. So that one initially was surprising, because I was like, I don't think of myself as like just going alone. But when I sort of unpacked it a bit more, I was like, no, I think it's just more about the confidence to move forward and take risks, which I definitely, that aligns, but typically I like to not go it alone, but have people with me. All of the other strengths, I feel very much, you know, were places that I was already living out of, for obviously with belief and with my own personal faith journey. I definitely feel like everything comes from that lens of my decision-making process. And then in terms of connectedness, just being, I think that's the collaborative piece that I was talking about before, being connected, being collaborative, and working with people. And then futuristic, the idea of I have been, you know, in many leadership positions, being able to actually sort of vision cast and see things. And even as a director, so much of that is, you know, in the film world, you're creating something that doesn't exist yet. So you have to be future thinking when you're thinking about it, thinking about what the vision, what the overall picture is going to turn out to be. And then obviously you work collaboratively with people to do all the details. And then the last one was developer, which I would say in the last couple of years, this probably has become even more apparent to me in different roles that I've had. One being a cohort that I launched last year called the Creative Circle, which is where I actually got more connected with our mutual friend, Janelle. But I was helping coach a cohort of women creative leaders, not only professionally, but also in some personal development. And in that process, I realized how much I really love developing other people, empowering them, seeing them get connected with their strengths, their purpose, getting clear on what it is that they're made for, and then sort of launching them into all that God has for them. So I would say the developer piece has definitely become more of a passion. I think the older I get, the more I find that, you know, the wisdom and, you know, all the things that I've learned over the years, I enjoy passing that on and really developing people. So
That's awesome. I love kind of thinking about what all those mean. Well, as one of your first things, it seems like that you started doing was the filmmaking, right? Out of college. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit how that all came to be and like what inspired you or just kind of what launched you into the world of filmmaking.
Sure. So I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm a Tar Heel. And I went there because they had at the time, the number two journalism school in the country. And I was planning on being a journalist. I knew I enjoyed writing. And so I took a journalism class my freshman year. And at the same time, I took a film class. And the film class was taught by a cinematographer. So the cinematographer is the one who actually does the camera work and the filming. And so I remember sitting in this lecture hall and he's talking about, you know, the lighting, the music, these visual motifs, talking about film in a way I'd never even seen or watched a film. But something in that class and with him teaching just opened up my eyes to how magical and powerful storytelling was from a visual perspective. And then at the same time, I was taking this journalism class and I was having to I remember having to like cite all my sources and, you know, all these facts. And I was like, okay, I don't like doing this factual stuff. I lean way more on the creative writing side. So what I ended up doing was going to my advisor and telling her, hey, I really want to switch my major from journalism to film, which it was under the communications umbrella, but with the emphasis in film and media production. And then I ended up going into creative writing as my minor. So, but it was funny because I remember in that conversation, she leaned in and she was like, why would you do that? Like in her mind, the journalism track was like the safe bet, right? It was a great school. Yeah. She's like, why would you switch and go into film? What are you going to do with it? And I remember her asking me this question and I thought, I literally looked at her and I was like, well, and I guess being a naive, you know, 18, 19 year old, I just looked at her and I said, well, I just feel like if it's something that I love to do, I'll always, you know, it won't feel like work for me and I'll always just enjoy it. I'm going to follow my heart. Right. And so I step into this and now, you know, I just turned 40 this year. And I can say in the last 20 years, I've never not worked in my field in some capacity around storytelling. It may not be, you know, out in Hollywood doing what I was doing right after school, but that has always been embedded in me. So it was a risk on one hand, because I remember thinking, oh my gosh, after I left that, like she tried to talk me out of it. And at the same time, I can see where God, you know, used that and allowed me to use, you know, that love and that gift that I had to tell stories in so many different capacities. So that was the beginning.
Yeah, that's exciting. And yeah, like you said, it was a brave step to say, I'm going to change and do something different. But I love like what you say, that when we're really operating out of our strengths, our wiring, it is a joy. And it's just so amazing because it's things that we're good at and that can bless other people. And I'm sure there's countless of people that have seen the different films and all the things that you have done that have been moved in significant ways from things that you've done. I would love to hear even what are some of your favorite stories or films that you've done that were most meaningful to you or even challenging or just a little inside scoop. I don't know that many filmmakers.
Well, I'll jump back real quick to right after I graduated, because I think that this was like my first or actually it was right before I graduated, excuse me, I was doing a study abroad program in Thailand, studying documentary filmmaking. Because before all of this, I had always studied narrative film. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to Hollywood, I'm going to make narrative films. And I really didn't have a lot of experience in the documentary world, which now, again, operating your strengths and being able, the connectedness, so much of documentary filmmaking is being able to connect with the subjects, right? Being able to collaborate, co-create with them, to tell their story in a way that is authentic to who they are. So I'm in Thailand and the tsunami happened. So this was 2005 and the tsunami happened. And then 2 weeks later, I was on my way to Thailand and I was studying documentary filmmaking. And then wow. I really, again, goes back to the belief piece, right? And my faith, I was very heartbroken about what was happening in Thailand. And so many of the people, they were losing their land because they had lived there for hundreds of years and didn't have, you know, documentation for the land rights, if you will. So what happened was after the tsunami happened, the government and other entities tried to come in and displace these folks and take their land. And they were wanting to build, you know, 5-star resorts on them and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So this was going on. And of course, all of these people had just lost loved ones and had been through the trauma, right, of seeing their family members, you know, die in front of them or trying to find their bodies because they were swept out to sea. So there was a lot of stuff going on that I was all the way in Bangkok. So it's about 12 hours from where this was happening. But I remember feeling, gosh, what can I do? How can I help these people? And again, going back to kind of how I'm wired, I've always had a heart for missions and had done missions work even from the time that I was 11 years old. And so I go to college and I'm like, okay, I don't feel called to be a missionary. I'm now have chosen this path of filmmaking. And then next thing I know, I find myself in Thailand. And at the same time, with the ability and the skills to tell stories and learning how to create documentary films. But again, with this passion and belief of, oh my gosh, I need to go help these people. So I ended up applying for a grant, which I received. So I ended up staying there longer. All of my classmates left and went home and I went and moved down to the South. And at the time, I wasn't trying to make a film or anything like that. I just went, I was helping with different nonprofits. I was moving, you know, honestly, bodies to the makeshift morgues at the monasteries, and just then ended up living in a refugee camp in one of the monasteries and really just helping serve in any way I can. Some of it was with the kids, some it was with the adults. But through those relationships and sitting in front of the fire and just hearing their stories, they asked me, invited me into their story, and they said, would you please tell our story of what's going on? So that's how I ended up making this documentary about the land rights and about after the tsunami. And it was just so interesting because I remember I was on my way to go to an interview and start developing this story. And I'm sitting in the back of this truck and I was hitchhiking, which I do not recommend, but at 21, I thought I was invincible. So I'm in there by myself with all my gear in tow. And I'm seeing this, you know, beautiful scenery of Thailand. And then it hits me. And I just remember there is a line in the book, The Purpose-Driven Life, Rick Warren's book. And I had been reading it at the time. And it said, your capabilities match your calling. And it was in that moment, it was like this revelation of, I always felt this tension between my passion for missions and serving and filmmaking, because filmmaking felt very, in some ways, like self-centered, right? People are saying, oh, you just want to go to Hollywood or it, you know, and I thought, how do these two things go together? And in that moment, it was like the Lord in his kindness showed me that this is exactly how he created me and how he wired me, and that he gave me the ability and this love and passion for filmmaking as well as for serving and missions. And the reality is, as a missionary, I wouldn't have had access and been able to go to the places that I did, but because I had the skills of filmmaking, I was able to get access and to actually help people in this way. And of course, missions is a mindset, right? So it doesn't matter what your title is, it's how we come in and how we show the light of Jesus and how we serve other people. So that was sort of a cornerstone. And I think I was 21 at the time. So it really set me up for very early on being able to see that he's going to use me in any way he wants, and how all of these pieces, they're not in tension with one another, they actually all work together in a way that makes me, you know, who I am, and to really help serve and be the person that, you know, that God's created me to be.
Mm, wow. I love that. I love, like you say, just seeing how all those parts came together and how being with those people, I mean, just all the things coming together. That's just so great. Mm-hmm. Well, I looked a little bit about your story or your film called Junebug, mm-hmm. and that obviously is very gripping, and I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah. So Junebug actually came about. So my mom passed away of cancer when I was 22. So it was right after I had gotten back and graduated college. And I remember at the time after she passed away, I was living out in Los Angeles at the time. I had gone out there and was working in the industry. And through that period, it was, you know, very traumatic to lose, you know, for me to lose my mom at such a young age. But I remember always having this question in my head. Yes, I lost my mom at 22. My youngest sister at the time was 17, so she was still finishing high school, which was obviously, you know, developmentally much younger. But I kept asking myself the question, well, what would happen if it was to an 8-year-old? You know, what would my life have looked like if I had lost my mom at 8? And I think it came from a place of trying to keep myself thankful for the 22 years I had versus being so fixated on all that she was going to miss in my life, which was, you know, obviously me getting married one day, me having kids one day. Like, I hadn't gone through those periods in my life. So part of, you know, me trying to focus and be thankful for what I did have was me beginning to ask these questions as a filmmaker and think, all right, so what would life have looked like if I lost her at 8? And so that was sort of the premise of Junebug. Was it's really autobiographical in some ways, but I put myself into an 8-year-old, you know, character. And then the film kind of came out of that and thinking about how it would impact an 8-year-old and in the story, Junebug. And it actually, I did a lot of research around grief and grief in children and how it's handled. And it's such an interesting world actually with kids. And a lot of times children can react in very different ways, right? You can have anger. In Junebug's case, she stops talking. She only communicates through writing and she loses her voice. And it's physical and as well as metaphorical. A lot of times when you go through trauma, right, we lose our voice. So the whole point of the film is really Junebug's journey of getting her voice back and also realizing that it's not her fault that her mom died, because a lot of times there's in grief, there's a lot of guilt that comes with it when you're when you're a survivor, whether it's, you know, a traumatic event or whatever that happens to you. So it's really sort of this beautiful picture of how through the course of her journey, she ends up living a summer with her grandmother and with all these crazy old ladies, and how it really brings it out of her that she comes to this place of understanding it's not her fault, and that really learning to accept her story. And I think a lot of times when we learn to accept the things that have happened to us that we can't change, what it allows us to do is just change our perspective about it, right? And then through that, she gets connected and obviously grows and learns and gets and speaks. That's the last bit of the film, is that she gets her voice back, her physical voice, as well as, you know, her mental, emotional voice as well.
Wow. That was so powerful. I have a granddaughter named Sadie June, and we call her Junebug sometimes. Her dad calls her that the most, but yeah, that was just so gripping of, yeah, just giving vision to people. I mean, I'm sure it touched people in so many different ways. Did you get a lot of feedback from that, from people that saw
some, it? I got some. That was interesting because that the process of making it, you know, oftentimes everyone just sees the end product. But as a filmmaker, the process for me of creating that was I wrote it and then it took me about 5 years. And it's not a feature film or anything, but it took me about 5 years to actually finish it. And it's because I evolved as a storyteller through those years. And it was interesting. I had finished going through grief counseling, and I didn't get any counseling until probably I was around 27. So it must have been about 5 years after she died. And I had come to a place in my own life career. I had been really sick. I had Lyme's disease and I was going through my own chronic illness and I was felt just stuck. That was kind of the best way to describe it. And so I remember talking to someone about, have you ever gone through counseling after you lost your mom? And I was like, no, you know, you just, right? Life goes on. You just try to survive the best you can. I don't think I even was aware of a lot of the stuff that was available. So anyways, I ended up starting to go to this grief counselor. And it was through this process for me of going through counseling where I this idea of I got my voice back. And so I remember going through this sort of, it was this sort of an intensive, maybe like 2 to 3 months of counseling. And then I wrote that film in about 3 days. And I literally just came up for like water. I kind of like shut myself in my room and just wrote it. It just kind of flowed out of me. But then I just tucked it away for a long time. And then it was a few years later that one of my very good friends, I had sent it to her and she's like, yeah, I'll help you produce it. And we had to go through like raising the funds for it, even though it was a short film, you know, it takes money and begging our friends and asking for favors and all that kind of stuff and finding locations. And so, but then after we even wrapped the film, there was even sort of more evolution for me as a storyteller that it took a long time for me to go back to see what we had created. And I was like, man, oh, I would have changed this. I would have done this different. I would have, you know, you analyze it. And I had to come to a place where I'd really struggled with perfectionism and as an artist and coming to the place of like, I remember it was another filmmaker friend of mine said, done is better than perfect. And I had to come to that place of just letting go. And it's like, okay, this is what it is. Like it's not going to be perfect. There are things that you want to go change, but that's the problem when you take 5 years to make a film because you're like, oh, I go do this and change that. But anyways, I learned a lot through that process and even about me, but it was so connected, I think, to my own healing journey and why it took me a while to get that out. So, but it did premiere at a local theater here and we did get some really good feedback when it aired. And then I've connected with some other grief organizations that work with kids and have offered it as a tool as well for them to use. So
that's awesome. I know I was in a friend's wedding in North Carolina years ago and just the scenes with the older ladies and their accents. And I was just like, oh, it just reminded me of when I was there to rejoice with my friend getting married and the culture there in North Carolina. So, well, I know, like you mentioned, it seems like lately you've kind of delved in more to coaching and using your developer strength with gathering women and helping them find their place and what how they want to use their gifts. Tell me what else you've enjoyed about that, or is that something you're going to continue doing as you coach women?
Yeah, it's really something that I've enjoyed. The Creative Circle was birthed, which is the coaching program that I created, was really birthed out of my own experience of feeling very much alone as a leader in a creative organization. And there was a lot of men who were wonderful, but I felt like, okay, I don't have another woman that was at the same level as I was and this was when I was going through like motherhood for the first time, then motherhood again, and transitioning back to work and all the different things. And so I think sometimes in that process, when you don't have other women or a community, other women who are on the same page, I felt very much alone. And I remember feeling like, man, I just want someone to like talk to about this and how do I lead this team, or, you know, these different questions that were kind of coming up for me. And so I was like, if I feel that way, then oh my gosh, how much more are other women going to feel that way? So I honestly sort of put this out as a beta. I thought, let me just see if I get any other women who are in a similar spot. And so I did, and sort of just tested the market. And it was interesting. I had a flood of responses of women coming and saying, oh my gosh, especially as a leader, I feel so alone. I don't have the support, not only the professional support, but also the personal support. So much of the time we're told to kind of like, as women, compartmentalize, like don't even say you have kids and fear in the workplace. Don't do this, don't do that. And how can we show up as our full selves as a leader in the workplace and be authentically who we are? So it took me on this journey of really creating this program to help support women creative leaders in every aspect, you know, of their life. And so it's been a wonderful place where I've been able to use that developer skill for me, for sure. Right now, with the cohort just ended this past December, so I have paused that right now. But another area that I see the Lord leading me into is really helping develop this next generation of Christian artists and what I like to call creative discipleship. So a similar path in terms of the whole self, looking at it, but also from a skills perspective and really identity of knowing who they are in Christ, having their foundation from that place, and then helping them be able to understand how they can tell redemptive stories that can encourage and inspire people. So yeah, that's kind of the next chapter that looks like is unfolding in my life. But obviously, same skill set, same idea of development. Uh-huh. I think it just might look a little different, but we're still in the beginning phases and stages of this sort of new venture, if you will.
That's awesome. I know recently I've had a coach, and futuristic is one of her strengths also. And I don't know, I appreciate it so much. Like, adaptability is one of my strengths. It's like I'm more in the here and now, and We all need each other, and we all are mm-hmm. wired so differently. But I think even though you're talking about your developer, I can just see just obviously the benefit the people that you get to coach will have of just you leading them and just having vision for them and all that that entails. It's exciting.
Well, absolutely.
I know that, like we said, taking this assessment wasn't like the key piece for you, as you've been living out of your strengths pretty much your whole life, it looks like. But if someone is like new to even understanding Clifton Strengths or just taking it, like what thoughts would you have for them? Or even has there been any encouragement for you as you're embracing who God made you? I mean, I see that you've been living well and stepping into new places and how you're wired, but how would this information be helpful for someone else, you think?
Oh, I think this information is just incredibly helpful, because even for me, and I had mentioned to you before, like I had taken some different assessments, and I think I took the DISC assessment, and even as a leader when I was in management, they made me take some kind of assessment. And the only thing I honestly remember from a lot of those assessments is like, you know, are you dominant? Are you this? Whatever. It was very like broad strokes and not super specific. And sometimes those things, you know, would lean a little like even feeling like, I don't know if this is totally accurate. So for me, when I took this Clifton assessment with you, because I had said, yeah, I've done some of these in the past, but it's also been a long time. And I am a firm believer that it's good to take assessments, especially after you are having kind of like, whether it's career pivots or personal evolution pivots or your, you know, faith, because I mentioned this to you before about, you know, as my faith has grown, I think some of these skills or strengths have developed in other ways because of that faith journey with the Lord. So like belief is being on the high. I feel like the more I've come to know who Jesus really is and have that really deep relationship, I feel like it's shifted kind of some of my uh-huh. strengths, right? But it's been a huge help, because when I was diving in and reading this more this past week before we, you know, got on this call, I was like, oh, I can really see where these pieces are mapping, or I can see where maybe some things have felt like not like strengths. You know, sometimes you can get feedback in different roles, and people give you feedback that more critical in some of these pieces, like maybe the future piece, for example, just using the futuristic about, oh, you're a vision caster and where that could be good. But maybe they harp on, well, you're not present, you know, you're always thinking about this stuff. So, and there's always, right, like the flip coin of all of these, if you, right. You know, if you only are kind of one way. So I think it's helpful to understand, you know, what the strengths are, but also what some of the pitfalls can be with those strengths, so that you're more aware of potential blind spots, you know, that you can have. So for me, and even in my relationship, you know, with my husband, it's like, yeah, I can be a total big picture vision caster, but like the dishes still need to be done today, right? Like there's still stuff yeah. that has to get done today. And so I have to be really conscientious and self-aware of that stuff of like, okay, I can see where we need to go, but I also have to like slow down enough to do the things and be present today. So that I think is also really helpful with doing these assessments, not only connecting the dots, or even if you're not sure of what your strengths are, obviously it can shed light on that. But even if you have, like me, maybe some more ideas of what they are, it's been really helpful to confirm that, but also to really understand more of like, what are those blind spots with some of these strengths that I need to be aware of so that I don't bulldoze people or I don't miss things because I'm so focused on, you know, the future or all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's so good. I think, yeah, it's awareness of like what's working and kind of, like you say, definitely the blind spots. I think too, I love when people that work together can see and hear the other people too. It's like, okay, we really need each other as we work together because, you know, none of us have all the tricks in our bag. So we need each other. So, well, I know even for me at almost 66 years old, I think I'm still learning, I'm still growing, but I think even just this idea of embracing our strengths, like how are we really enjoying and accepting and developing, using our strengths for God's glory and kingdom impact. And I think that's what I love about just this tool. I know it's just a tool, but I think I hate when I see people that I'm around that are like, well, I don't know if I have any strengths or what I should do. I'm like, yes, you do. I mean, we're all so different. And I think, I don't know, that's what I love about it. And I know people know this is a topic I like to talk about, but I think just the value of seeing and understanding myself, but also understanding you, like, oh, that's why you're so passionate about this or that, or not this or that. So
absolutely. And I think too, like sometimes in our educational system, you know, a lot of times we can get feedback and focus on developing our weaknesses. I feel like I remember as a child and as a, you know, a teenager, people, you know, different assessments or things at school are getting feedback of like, hey, you're really weak in these areas. Let's focus on these areas because you're really weak on it. And I think sometimes, and not that you don't want to develop, you know, and grow in your weaknesses, but I think sometimes when we do that, we try to just level the playing field, right? And it's almost like, oh, I don't need to have anything that I'm really strong at. I just need to develop these weaknesses. Like I need to make these weaknesses a little stronger. And it's more of like the being really, what's the word that they always say? Being well-rounded, right? Oh, you just need to be well-rounded. And I think that's sort of a detriment actually, because then I think sometimes what happens is you get to the place where I don't really know what I'm good at, you know, like what you were just saying, like, I don't know. I can kind of do like a little bit of everything. I'm not even talking about like skills, but even in like this kind of stuff of how you were created, instead of really saying, okay, yeah, I might not be, I'll just use an example. I might not, my top might not be adaptability. And while it's important to be adaptable, why don't I focus on the things I am really good about? Have an awareness of those pieces, but not let that be the hyper focus of like, oh, I need to be focused on being like super more flexible, you know, and adaptable. So I think these kind of assessments are helpful to really clarify for people what they are good at, what they're good at naturally, where their strengths are, to focus on that, but then also to look at they can look at those weaknesses. But I think so much of, I don't know, our educational system oftentimes just focuses on like, all right, let's bring these weaknesses up and let's focus on that, when the reality is it's interesting when you can look at it from the other perspective and focus on your strengths more. And then those pieces sometimes come along in the process, but then you feel like where you're naturally already bent, and it becomes easier in some ways.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, I think one of the little films that you did, I can't remember the name of it, but the people, the instrumental orchestra, that kind of captures this idea that we're talking about, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yep. Everyone has a role to play, you know, then there it was this idea of an orchestra. And so you have the violinist and you have the clarinet player and you have the French horn, and, you know, each of them are playing their little piece. And then at the very end, the lights go up and you see it's actually this, the incredible sound comes from all of them playing in their own part, but in sync, you know, in sync, right?
Yeah.
On this beautiful stage. And that's what creates an entire orchestra. And so I 100% think that's a beautiful metaphor for this, is that as we all operate in our part and our piece, and when we come together, you know, what an incredible harmonious sound that we can all make in the kingdom as we're doing our pieces. Because, you know, there are things that I'm like, I'm not wired and I couldn't do it all. Like, that's not who I am, you know, but not trying to make myself anything more than who I am and who God's created me to be, and to live into that, and to walk into that with God confidence, and not trying to compare yourself to anybody else or their journey or their strengths is super important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love that. That was really inspiring. Might even put a little link to that video, because it was just, I think it just captures that, like what we're talking about. Well, I appreciate so much you taking time to chat with me about you and your strengths. And I know this is just a little snippet of the things that you are doing, but how would people find out more about you and what you're doing?
A couple of different ways. You can go to hannahhamza.com. That's probably the first place is the website. And there's also a form there that they can put in some information and get on my email list. Or you can go to Hannah Hamza Creative. That's my handle for Instagram. Follow me there. Send me a direct message. Those are probably the two best places to get in touch.
Oh, that's great. Well, I have one last question. What has it brought you joy lately, or put a smile on your face?
Oh, so I have been, like, God has really given me a pretty enormous task, which at first I was like, oh man, I don't know if I can do this. But it was about 6 months ago that I really felt like he wanted me to write a book. And I was like, oh, I don't know, because it's not just like any book. It's actually my husband's, his story. And I'm like, oh, I want to be a good steward of this story, but it feels very daunting. And it's his testimony and sort of wrapped into a little bit of our story, but it's a pretty massive undertaking. And it also feels a little bit daunting, but I have surrendered that and I have gone into like the strengths of like, okay, like I can do this. It does feel like a risk, but right, it is in line with what I love doing, which is storytelling. It's just in a different format. Anyway, so I have really dove into the process, and I actually was writing some pages last night, and I am loving the process. I am loving doing it. I'm like laughing while I'm writing this thing, and my husband comes and he's like, "What are you doing?" I'm just like, oh, because I'm remembering all of anyways, these stories and these pieces as I'm writing it. And I'm really enjoying, I don't know, it's a new challenge, but I'm really enjoying the process of doing it. And because, again, the belief piece, right? I know that God has told me to do it. So I'm like, okay, if he told me to do it, then I'm going to do it. So, and I can see the vision too, like the futuristic piece. I can see the vision of why this story needs to be told and what the purpose is in God's kingdom. So anyway, so that's been putting a smile on my face, is this process.
Oh, that's awesome. When are you hoping to have a deadline or?
The hope is that it's going to be released in October. So actually relatively soon, this October 2024 is the plan.
That's
for the
exciting.
Book.
I look forward
to seeing
that.
Working with a publisher. So it's real. Like it's not just me making notes on the back of a napkin. You know what I mean? Like it's actually like coming to fruition,
happening.
Which is happening. So I'm like, okay, as soon as I was like, God, I don't know how to do this, but you're going to have to do it. Then all the different pieces started to fall into place. So yeah. So I'm excited. It's going to be great. October will be exciting.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Hannah. This has been so fun to chat with you. And I want to dig into more of the things that you've done and just see just the fruit of who you are and how that's impacting the world. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Barbara. It's been a blessing. You too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope this time has given you hope and encouragement about how amazing you are, or helped you understand someone you know or work with or love. If you're curious about your top 5 strengths, you can take the assessment at cliftonstrengths.com. If this episode's been helpful to you, please leave a review share the podcast with a friend, or subscribe to Embrace Your Strengths podcast. You can find more information at BarbaraCullell.com. I sure look forward to our next time together. Take care.